That's right. We are right here, Sharp Facets Gallery. That's right. That's where my studio is. And Congressman Mark Sanford, in case you didn't know, I have a wonderful jewelry store right here. If you ever have a need, please don't hesitate to give us a call.
Yes, ma'am.
How you doing today, Congressman Mark Sanford?
I'm good. How you been?
I've been very good, very good. And, of course, there's always a lot of things going on up there in Washington, D.C., and I was hoping that you could fill us in on some of the things that are going on. One of my questions right off the bat is, since you're on the Homeland Security, and since the president has just keeps changing the laws on how he thinks things should be, you know, they've just decided to put off health care for another 2 years, doing away with those bad policies. What do you have as far as a concern where Homeland Security, do you think that something could go wrong there?
Well, I mean, I think that the overall notion of Homeland Security, well outside of borders, well outside of, you know, a national defense apparatus, is the working of our political system. And I think that what the president is doing these days undermines the very constitutionally rooted system that, you know, the founding fathers set in place more than 200 years ago. And so if you look at his use of, you know, executive order, if you look at, you know, his, you know, trimming, in essence, the sails of his own law, the health care law, I think it is a threat in many ways to the larger notion of Homeland Security, because I would define Homeland Security ultimately as something that's set on the foundation of balance of power. Lord Acton said, you know, a long, long time ago, that absolute power corrupts, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think that, you know, what has a lot of people very leery these days is something like, you know, the change to Obamacare, where he again says, oh, no, let's not enact on that part, let's not move forward on that part. Because what you have there is, in essence, the executive branch rewriting the law. I mean, that's not the way our system is set up. So, yeah, I'd see that as a threat to the larger notion of security here at home.
And as you're on that committee on Homeland Security, what are the things that, you know, we keep hearing about terror threats and things coming our way? What are the things that on the Homeland Security Committee that y'all are actively looking at as changing or things that we should be concerned about?
Well, I mean, you have a whole host of different threats that are sort of talked about there on a daily basis. You know, one of them has been function within TSA. There's been a fair amount of waste. It was a program that was, you know, basically $1 billion was spent on it, wherein they did for lack of a better term, I'd call it emotional profiling. So what they would do is they have assigned officers who would be at airports across the country, and they would look at you and they'd say, I think that they might be a threat. Well, I mean, last time I checked, based on this larger notion of civil liberty that our founding fathers ensured, it could be that you're having a bad day. It could be that your boss laid you off. It could be that you know, your kid's misbehaving. It could be that things are going wrong at work. It could be things are going wrong at home. I mean, just a lot of different things could have you maybe acting a little bit strange. And it's not government's role to look at you and decide what kind of day you're having. Yet we spent $1 billion on that program. So, I mean, it's anything from looking at programs that do or don't work within TSA all the way over to this larger notion of border security and what's going to happen there next.
And as far as our, you know, particularly on immigration, you know, there was a lot of impetus to do immigration. And, of course, now we're into an election year, and it seems like that has fallen a little bit by the wayside, and yet our borders still are not protected. Where are we going with that as far as particularly the Mexican border, Mark?
I think it's very important. I mean, I think a broad reach of different conservatives in the Congress have said, look, let's have a conversation on immigration reform after we've secured the border. Mm-hmm. But first things have to come first. And I think that what soured the well on that particular issue in this last year was the president's action with regard to health care. I mean, I'll go back to the basic foundation. The basic foundation is, you know, you have a Congress that deliberates and comes up with laws, a judiciary that interprets that law as to whether or not it's constitutional, and then an executive branch who is to administer the law. And, you know, when the president stepped in and unilaterally began to dismember portions of his own law, which means he's, in essence, rewriting it, at that point the well was soured with regard to immigration reform, because people said, wait a minute, if he's going to pick and choose on his own health care law, then surely he's going to pick and choose on a broader immigration reform bill that at that time was being talked about and it had been passed in the Senate.
Sure. Well, so there's a couple of things that are out there that are looking at stopping the president. Number one was the STOP Act put out by Congressman Tom Rice, and then yesterday the Judiciary Committee approves Trey Gowdy's bill, with several others involved in it, to stop executive overreach. Do you think that these stand a chance of doing anything?
Doubtful at this point. I mean, I think they're important messaging bills. I think that they're important in that, you know, it lays out where members of Congress are coming from. Obviously, the difficulty would be, you know, how are you going to get the president to sign something like that? It's not going to happen. And so, I think that there are steps in the right direction of saying this is what we believe. Their enactment at this point is difficult.
Sure. And, you know, I think what isn't the difference between the STOP Act just as stops, really? I mean, if it's passed in the House, then it can be acted on. It does not have to go to the Senate, whereas this new law has to go to the House and to the Senate.
I think that the difficulty, I mean, again, let me just back up and say, you know, the basic from my standpoint is, you know, Trey Gowdy is doing an outstanding job. I spoke with him yesterday on the House floor, and he'd spent hours over the weekend, and he basically dedicated the whole weekend to preparation for testimony that was to occur yesterday in the Government Reform Committee with Lois Lerner with the IRS.
Correct.
As you might know, Lois came to the committee and then pleaded the Fifth, though he'd spent the whole weekend preparing. I think that Trey Gowdy is exceptional in the way that he prepares and does his homework. So, I think his bill is a great bill. I'd love to see it go through. I think it's more comprehensive in many ways than what's talked about with STOP. I think one of the difficulties with STOP is that, the question is who interprets, because you flip it over to the judiciary, and is it judges that are appointed by the executive branch that are doing the interpreting? I mean, who interprets in it? That's the part that I think gets a little bit difficult.
I'm sure Trey was just beside himself yesterday after the exchange and what happened there.
I'm sorry,
I'm sure Trey was beside himself yesterday, if you talked to him, after they were in court, and particularly, you know, I can't believe, Mark, what we have evolved to up there in Congress. We were talking about this earlier with Representative Cummings and Representative Issa, and what is being played out on the screen, on TV.
Yeah, I mean, Trey told me about that. I wasn't there to see it, but it sounded a bit messy. And, I think that Darrell Issa in that case was perfectly correct in that once, you know, you've got somebody stepping up to give testimony, they plead the Fifth. At that point, you really can't ask them further questions. And so, you know, what Cummings wanted to do in terms of asking a number of leading questions that might be helpful to the witness or to IRS was inappropriate. You know, he felt clamped down on it. He reacted and went downhill from there. But I think that the important part there is, some of the civility that I think that people, you know, believe needs to exist within any democratic system has eroded. And, you know, part of that's based on the balkanization of cable news channels and the way that people play these different audiences. I mean, if you actually look at the give and take of members on the House floor and the way that they interact, or the way that they interact with, you know, at the House gym and working out, or the way they interact at the committee level, it's still surprisingly civil. I mean, I left Congress 13 years ago. It's not that much different. But incidents like the one that occurred yesterday, I think at times, are about playing to different audiences back home, and I think that's unfortunate.
Well, that what do you think? What do you think with what the president did yesterday by extending a 2-year extension for individual policies that don't meet the requirements, that they can still keep those? What do you think about that, Mark? Because we have an election coming up, and of course, everybody's saying, well, it was to help Democrats in the election.
Yeah, I mean, politics drives a lot of what's going on. If you look at the president's budget, you know, which just came out this week, I mean, you see a lot of politics in that. It's, you know, fundamentally a messaging piece. It has numbers in it that never balance. I mean, the idea of an executive of a company, the idea of a head of a household saying, okay, we're going to put together a family budget or a business budget that never balances, people would say, okay, you got a real problem here. Can you imagine a college president saying, we're going to put together numbers that never balance? But that's what our chief executive has done with this latest budget. So I would just chalk that one up to a lot of things these days in, you know, Washington are obviously done for political reason and political fact, and that's been exacerbated here of late.
And what do you think about the future of the Republican Party as far as with this upcoming election and some of the things that have happened? What do you think that, for example, do you think the Republicans can retake the Senate?
Well, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball any more than you do on that.
No.
But what I would say is that, you know, there is a remarkable reservoir of common sense that rests within working, regular, everyday people across this country. And the pendulum swings in politics. And so, you know, for a while, people greeted the president. I'll never forget that TV shot of him speaking at, I guess it was in Colorado, and it looked like a Roman emperor stepping out before just a giant audience. It was theatrically, you know, very appealing. And people, greet him like a conquering war hero. That's not so much the case these days, and it's based on people looking at what's happening in Washington, what's happening with the Congress, what's happening with the executive branch, weighing it and saying, is my life getting better? And a lot of people, at a grassroots level, have gotten frustrated. So, you know, I would worry less about what's going to happen in the Republican or Democratic Party than what's happening in people's lives. And what people are saying is, you know, this so-called economic recovery isn't feeling like an economic recovery to me, because if I'm not struggling, I know the three people down the street that are. And so as a consequence, you see the electoral effect. You know, Democrats had hoped very much to take back the House. They'd worked hard on that. It's looking like that's not going to materialize. I don't think that there's a political pundit out there that's saying that looks really strong at this point. And it looked for a while like, you know, Democrats had a lock on the Senate. Charlie Cook, who's probably, you know, the best, you know, political estimator, or this guy Stu Rothenberg, either one of them, both of them are now saying it's a 50-50 toss-up on whether or not Republicans take back the Senate. So I would defer to them. I'd say that, you know, they're the experts that study the composition of different states and different congressional districts. And their take is the Senate's 50-50. That's a pretty remarkable swing from just a couple of years ago, really just a couple of months ago. And I think it has everything to do with, again, that reservoir of common sense with working people across this country saying, this ain't working for me.
Yeah, exactly. So as far as what is going on with the budget and you also being on the infrastructure, where are we going to go with our infrastructure here? Is there going to be money? You know, a report just came out yesterday that the roads in South Carolina are really worse than ever. Where are we going to go? Are we going to be able to compete on a global level based on the fact that we don't have the structure the way it should be?
Well, I am on the Transportation Committee.
Right.
I would say, I guess, three different things. One is, piece of infrastructure is what's happening with, you know, water resources across this country. And there was a big war to build that passed in bipartisan fashion that really a lot of authority had been ceded over the executive branch. I'll go back to that notion of the pendulum swinging. This one brought it back to basically saying, well, the executive branch has a role in deciding on some of these water resources projects, you know, harbors and ports across the country, canals and the like. But Congress does too, and so there's funding that's been put in place. For instance, the deepening and the dredging of Charleston Harbor, which obviously impacts, you know, facilities up in Greenville or Spartanburg and their ability to export product or import product. The next thing on the map is the highway bill, and that one's probably going to be a bit more difficult, but that one's going to come up, and so I would say there's never enough. I would say that as a country, we've got to look at more creative ways of handling infrastructure. I think that, for instance, South Carolina is a donor state. For every dollar that we send in gas tax, we get less than a dollar back from Washington, D.C. So we're putting money into places where, you know, people are leaving, and we're putting less money into the places where they're arriving. I think we got to look at the overall funding bill in terms of where it goes. And I guess the third thing I think we got to look at is, I think we have to really take a serious look at more in the way of public-private partnerships. I mean, the tollway there on the south side of Greenville sure didn't work out real well for investors. That was a disaster. But there are a lot of examples around the country wherein, you know, people have used private resources, not for existing capacity, but for new capacity. And I think we ought to probably look creatively at that one as well. If we do those three things, I think that, you know, if we look at a balance between where executive and legislative branch are coming at and looking at priorities, if we use more in the way of public and private, and we look at the overall funding mechanism as to whether or not we're sending money to places where people are leaving, I think we've at least taken steps in the right direction. Is there ever enough? No, but I think we'd take steps in the right direction.
Sure. And what do you think about what's happening in the Ukraine? For my final question here today, we watch this every day, and where do you think it's going to end up, or what do you think?
Well, I think two things. One is, I think that Thomas Jefferson said a couple hundred years ago, eternal vigilance was the price of liberty. I think that what's happening in the Ukraine is a reminder of the fact that there has been, as old as the ages, a struggle between this larger notion of freedom and independence and somebody else deciding for you how you're going to run your life. And that's age old. I think that what's going on there is sort of a reassertion of a second model that says we know what's best for you more than you know what's best for you. And I think that should be a reminder of how important it is that we obviously keep our military up and going, but I think that the precursor to funding a military is a vibrant economy and spending levels that are in check. You know, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that the biggest threat to America was not a foreign power, but our own debt. And so I think it's a reminder in an odd sort of way of the importance of keeping in place the different preconditions to true national security, and a reminder to every one of us as Americans to appreciate what we have in terms of individual liberty. As to the sort of mechanics of what's going on in Ukraine, I would say that we need to push back hard against Putin. I think he's a neighborhood bully, and he's going to reassert authority in any way that he can. If you look at the struggle that occurred, you know, 6 years ago, about the time of the financial crisis, you know, he was stepping into Georgia, and here he is basically playing at the same model in the Ukraine. And I think that that's worrisome, and I think that bullies are best dealt with directly. He needs to be dealt with directly, and I think that probably one of the strongest tools would be impacting his finances, because his economy is anything that robust. And I think he has a long list of financial backers and financial beneficiaries as a result of his you know, time and power that could be affected that would get his attention.
So you think putting sanctions, grabbing his bank accounts around the world?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Russian, you know, billionaire, and all of a sudden you're not able to walk freely the beaches of Miami, and, you know, your account in New York is locked, and your condo in New York and Miami are impacted, it begins to get your attention.
And does the president have the stomach to do it?
That's the $94 question.
Well, I'm glad I thought of it here today. Congressman,
well, it's great to hear your voice, and thanks so much for letting me join you for a moment.
Absolutely. We appreciate it so much, and look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.